I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am Mike Vardy, your host, the founder of Productivityist and Productivity Strategist. I'm also a husband, father, getting ready for dinner here as we're recording this intro. But I wanted to get this out here, gift wrapped especially for you. This is Christmas Day as this is released. So for those of you that celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. And I wanted to have a discussion with myself and another person who's really enthusiastic about productivity. And Simon Tyler definitely fits the bill. He's the author of two books, The Impact Code, and let's see, the other one is The Simple Way. Simple to remember, The Simple Way. So The Impact Code, 50 Ways to Enhance Your Presence and Impact at Work, is his latest book. He's got 50 short but powerful ways to raise your impact level in business. We had a really great conversation. I'm just going to dive into it. Let's just share this gift with you right now. Here is my discussion with Simon Tyler from the UK, a productivity strategist extraordinaire here on the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. This week, I have Simon Tyler with me. Simon, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Mike.
So you've got a couple of books out, and what I like about your, I've spent some time on your website. Of course, we'll have a link to this in the show notes. But the thing you focus on isn't just, you're really focusing on the impact, and not just impact, but precise impact that people can have. Can you kind of explain to the listeners out there? I mean, they've heard of impact before, and they've heard, I want to have an impact on, my family, on my work. But let's get to that precise part. Let's get to that precision. How do you define that, and how do you help people kind of get that precision when it comes to impact?
Okay. And actually, the journey of me getting the book out and on pen to paper or fingers to keyboard is exactly probably as I'm just about to describe.
And this is the impact code that we're talking about,
right? The impact code, exactly. Yeah. So, having had the first book was out, Simple Way was out, and my publisher said, what's coming next? What's next? And it didn't take long before I realized what I was being called to be involved in to help people or teams or when I speak at conferences, the consistent word was impact. And in business journals, I was just suddenly, when a word just grabs you, suddenly now see it.
Yeah.
And I can't stop seeing it. It's impact. I realized that that's what I was in called to do. And in one particular client where they can access all sorts of coaches, the company that sought out the coaches would always turn to me and say, Simon, we've got this person, we've got this lady, this man, and they want to work on their impact. And it was always coming to me. I thought, okay, well, I can't ignore this message anymore. Clearly, my hill I need to stand on for at least the next few years is about impact. And every few weeks I would write what I have glibly called a simple note that goes out to my subscribers through my website. And it would be a page, 3 or 4 minutes worth of a read, always trying to keep it pragmatic and useful about rethinking the way you go about work and being more efficient. So what I did is I shifted all of these simple notes about 2 years ago to being impact notes. And through 2014, when I was putting the book together, in essence, that was what I worked on. And I suddenly put more appropriate glasses on just to look around and think, what am I involved in that is having an effect with people, that is enhancing their impact? And then I studied in my own head and at my desk, so nothing scientific necessarily, but just studied the people I'd worked with and how their impact had shifted. And as a result, I spotted 5 aspects, if you like, that always come up when it comes to impact. And I can talk about those if you want
to. Sure, yeah, please dive into those.
And almost the process of how impact comes about, how enhanced impact by design, how that happens. So if I was to talk about the 5 first, 5 aspects, I noticed, and they all link up, and some people have one of the 5 brilliantly, and the other 4 are not really there. But when all 5 of these come together, wow, people are irrepressible. So the first one, rather obviously, is visual. which is, what do people look like? Are you, it's in the social interactions on the, clearly on websites too, in terms of your image on online, your visual impact isn't necessarily about looking smart all the time. It's about being consistent with who you are. It's about all of the nuances of how you come across visually that's consistent with everything else you do. Second one is about presence. What are you like when you're in the room? Are you quiet, gentle? Are you noisy? Are you outrageous? Whatever it is, nothing is right, nothing's wrong. Arguably, it's consistency that does it. Third one is connection. How do you connect to people and who are you connected to? So I know I see that in my clients. That, the people who have impact seem to be webbed, quite literally. They're connected to more people, or they're connected to a group of people that become part of the impact that they have. Fourth one is verbal impact. And for verbal, I guess you could also say what people write, the words they use, the phrases and their expressions, their the subtlety or the blatancy of the way they speak. And then the fifth one is the footprint. What is it like when the leader leaves the room? Do people talk about them or do they not talk about them? Is the atmosphere up, down, indifferent? Are people whipped up? Are they calmed down? Again, nothing's right, nothing's wrong. It's just, if all of those are consistent and come together, people have impact. That was a long answer, Mike, to question.
You know what I found interesting? We talked about the visual one right off the top, is that and consistency seems to be the thing that's prevalent through all of it, right? I mean, you want to be consistent across all four of those, or five of those, rather. But the visual one is if you, I think that if you present yourself visually in a way consistently, then do you find that it leads to the other ones a little bit better?
Yeah.
Like, because it's more innate. Does that make sense? Or at least you're focusing on it a little bit more, so these other four aspects, these other four components, can come in a lot easier, or at least they're with less friction.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the friction. Sometimes you want a bit of a connection and then maybe a little bit of early friction, but come back to that. But you're exactly right. Visual impact and consistency is important. When people can obsess about any of these five, by the way, and think, oh, well, that means I've got to buy new suits. No, that's not my point. The point is how you come across. Now, I'll give you an example. There's one particular guy I was working with, and just in conversation, we talked about his visual impact. And he realized, and I didn't make him feel bad about it, we just talked about it there, he had a fairly random wardrobe. So what he wore each day depended on perhaps the mood he was in when he opened his wardrobe in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of companies, Fridays was big dress down Friday. So he had a whole set of sloppy clothes that were him. And he was the leader of quite a large team. And I said, it's not everything. It's not the make or break of you as a leader, but what do you think people might see, consciously, unconsciously? What are they thinking when you turn up in this range of, if clients are in, you're wearing a really sharp suit. If no clients are in, you look like just any member of the general public. And again, it's not, don't obsess. So the piece he took from that was he suddenly realized for him, just needed to get some consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to people, find the consistency that's natural for you or an extension of maybe your quirk. So for him, he decided to get five white shirts. For him, it was white shirts. So he was a white shirt man. Chose his five white shirts. And irrespective of whether it was a dress down day or not, he'd still wear his white shirt. Might not wear a tie on those days, but it just brought a degree of consistency and bearing. And clearly it affects his presence. And a second point I want to make about that is my brand, and obviously I guess I have to be consistent because I talk about it. I've got some suits are important. Lots of my clients are in the financial districts in the UK and in the US. So it's important, one, that I look.
There's a preconceived notion as to how you should look.
Yeah, I'm not dressing for them, for sure. I'm not saying I'm dressing because I think they, you know, want them to like me. I have chosen some nice suits. When I put them on, and this goes to a point that you made a few moments ago, when I put those suits on, I can almost feel myself stand up straighter.
Yeah.
And it helps me step into who I am. Not a mask, not artificial. It's the bigger version of me. and I'm consistent. So when people see me, that's how they see me.
It's funny. One of the things I did this past year is I focused a little bit more on wardrobe as well. I know a gentleman by the name of Baron who runs Effortless Gent. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Because he, you know, I ran into a friend of mine at WDS last year, or was it this year or last year? I can't remember. But anyway, he's the guy that runs Nerd Fitness, Steve Cam. And I looked at him, and he's a gym guy. But when he was at the event, he's wearing like this nice collared shirt, jeans. He looked really good. I'm like, wow, man, you look great. And he goes, yeah, yeah. I was talking to Baron, and Baron says, you know, like T-shirts and jeans and stuff are all well and good for like social settings. But when I'm in an event like this, I should be wearing something collared and look a little bit more, you know, a little bit more defined, a little bit more presentable. And I thought about that. And this year, when I went to the World Domination Summit, I wore collared shirts. I didn't wear T-shirts, and I wore, and as much as it was hot in the summertime and I wanted to wear shorts most of the time, I wore pants. And it changed the perception of what, you know, it didn't just change how people looked at me, but also, like you said, it felt different when I wore that. It felt different when I, you know, I mean, when I, it's funny, I actually have, and this is a secret that I'm giving away right now, but I have a closet in my office, and I have a collared shirt in there. And sometimes when I get up, I'm not a morning person, sometimes I'll get up and I have an early morning coaching call. I will come downstairs with my, like, pajamas on, and I will throw the collared shirt over top of my pajama top, which is like a T-shirt. And people are like, oh, look, because it's not just the thing I need to present, but it's also, it puts me into that modality, right?
It does. It's like a football team put on their kits, their uniforms, obviously for practical reasons as well, but it's exactly that. You step into who you are when you put those clothes on. And again, the people listening to this, broadly, half of them will go, yeah, I get it. Other half will go, yeah, but it's not all about the suits you wear. No, it's not. If you are a shorts and a Bermuda shirt type person, then that's it.
Yep.
Find some. And I would always say to people that, you know, whatever your quirk is, whatever your brand is, realize it, do it strong, and do it obviously, and do it in a controlled way. So don't go too far.
I guess, I mean, because it's a brand, like, you do run the risk, I guess, of, and I mean, I know we're focusing particularly on this one, I definitely want to get into some more stuff, but you don't want to brandify yourself to the point where you get lost in the equation.
And you become a cliche of yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, all my collared shirts, when I go shopping for them, they have to have a front pocket, because I like to put a pen and a notebook in there. And so that's a consistency that I look for so that I could do that. And people are like, oh, well, you know, what if you like this? Yeah, I will. There are collared shirts I have that don't have that. But if given my druthers, I will do that. And that's a choice. It's not I'm going to do this because people expect me to have a notebook and thing in my front pocket. No, it's because I want to have that there. And in order for me to have that convenience, I want to make sure I have that. So, I mean, again, we're kind of veering a little bit. But I think the point is that, you know, I mean, all of these different areas, you know, connection, footprint, all that stuff, I mean, they play a role in impact, you know, in the impact that you have. Now, I want to talk to you a bit about, going back to your previous work, The Simple Way. How can complexity affect the impact that you have?
Well, it's interesting. The simpler things are, the faster things go. Mm-hmm. And that is in terms of message, that in terms of ideas, and I know it's subtleties on words, but complexity happens, complexity grows, but complicated is the unhelpful part. Mm-hmm. So it sounds virtually the same, but it's different. Complicated is what slows people down, it's what gives people a headache, it's what causes stress, it's what it's the difference between people around a table. I've observed team meetings where somebody just happens to be particularly analytical or mathematical in the way they think. So they'll make things complicated in that direction. And the more spatial thinkers just don't get it. And complication gets in the way and it breaks communication down. So some of the simplest things in the world move faster. And there's some very easy examples. I mean, you take when it was first launched, the iPod, which just had four buttons.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, that's incredibly simple. And clearly, below, underneath the bonnet, underneath the hood, there's a whole lot of technology, but simplicity leads the way. And lots of people, when I get in conversation with them, have a desire to simplify their world, to simplify the way they engage with people, but resist it because there's some hang-ups around simple equals I'm not trying hard enough, it's not intelligent enough, and people will think it's not good enough. There's a wonderful Einstein quote that says things should be as simple as they possibly could be, but not simpler.
Right. Yeah, that's a great quote.
Which, and the more I use that, I think, yeah, that's, oh yeah, absolutely, that's it.
How do you deal with people when they come across you that struggle? They're like, well, if we simplify this, then it's too easy, or we're going to miss some steps. Like, how do you deal with people? Because I've come across that too, where it's they say, well, if it's too simple, then it's not going to be good enough, and that's a misnomer as well.
That's all part of the dialogue, and the, you know, that, however many dialogues, 5,000 dialogues I've had with people. And sometimes it's that you just presented a tennis match type dialogue. Well, I can't simplify it. Well, I said, well, I'm challenging you to simplify it. How could it be simpler? And it's having sometimes some business bravery to reduce things down to 3 or even 1 from the 7, the 6, the 11 aspects or whatever it is. You know, in presentation terms, I'd work with people to just reduce the content of, say, a slide or a slide deck or the number of messages that they're going to make. It's a tough step, and sometimes it takes people to do it with a coach or a mentor, or somebody like me, and there's lots of people like me out there in the world, to be with them as they go through the simplifying step. But it takes some guts.
Now let's dive back into some more about impact, because I think that this transcends both books as well. Both your books have like the subtitle, like 50 ways to enhance your presence and impact at work. That's the subtitle for the impact code. And the simple way is 52 ideas to find your way through our complex world. There's a commonality there. You've said here are some specific, you've quantified that. Yeah. Do you find that quantifying these kind of things helps people qualify them better, so it gives them something to tether onto, as opposed to this amorphous, like, okay, how can I have impact, and I'll read this whole book and maybe pull some things out of it? Is that the deliberate tactic, or is it just that's how you think and that's why it's presented in that way?
It's definitely how I think, but that has perhaps been led and driven by the people I work with, the people I'm talking to, either on one-to-one or, you know, speaking at a conference or through the readers of my book. The people that I'm most often communicating to have got short attention span, low patience thresholds, and are not necessarily consumers, in terms of they don't consume a book front to back and sit and over the course of a week or two and munch through a whole book. And I know that. I know the people I work with are time short, but they want the answer. They're scraping for the answer. So the simple notes, the 52 simple notes in Simple Way and the 50 impact notes, if you like, in the impact code, are all potentially standalone. So if you just open the book randomly and read one, it's likely that it will resonate with you and you'll be able to work something through with it. Of course, you can read the book from cover to cover, and you'll get something from it. But I always say to people, if you do that, just turn down the corner of the pages that really hit the button for you. Let the other ones go past. And I've grouped them in both the books. I group them in a way that people can dip in specifically to the 3 or 4 that might be pertinent to where they are right now or the challenge they currently face right now. And as a result, I suppose I've unconsciously designed them both to be guidebooks that you carry with you all the time, that you dip in and dip out of. And I know particularly the Simple Way, which has been out 2 or 3 years now, the people that have really taken it to heart do take it with them, and they will take one simple note and share it with their team at a team meeting. So they get the whole team working on one simple note. And that's what they're designed to do.
So the nice thing about that is that, like you said, it creates, and I think this is a good point to discuss, is that that you can steer the culture ship slowly, which is a quote that I like. You know, you can slowly make changes, because I think that one of the things that freaks people out, especially when they talk about productivity or getting more productive or having more of an impact, is that they feel they have to do it with an all or nothing approach. Like, they don't break it down to the smallest steps. And obviously the way your books are designed, they are designed to do exactly that. How, when you're dealing with somebody or you're dealing with a group or a corporation, because you've spoken for a number of, at a number of events, how do you, what do you recommend they start with? I guess is probably the best way to put it, because most people will go, okay, well, there's 50 steps in here, 52. What's the one that you think is it? And you're like, there's so many. I mean, yeah. You and I probably have this, but have you found that people go, oh, if I start here, it kind of gets the ball rolling?
Yeah, well, there's probably two or three in a simple way that I would always have that I would talk about in a conference or present to people. But what I'll always try and do before a conference or before an engagement with a team or an individual is try and understand, you know, where are they now? What's important right now? What are they challenged by right now? And then I'll find the one, two or three impact notes or simple notes that are really going to hit and work for them straight away. And given the amount of time I can, when I'd sign a book at the end of a conference, I would always ask the person, you know, what's the challenge you face right now? And they tell me, and okay, I know exactly which one it was. So hopefully I give them a bit of a, especially a personalized book. I'll say, look, you need to read number 17, number 36 and number 5. That's the three. Start with those and then read the rest when you can. But if I just take one from each,
sure,
hopefully to answer your book, which is, let's take, yeah, 3-4-3. 3-4-3 is perhaps the most often referred to by me from the simple way. And the 3-4-3, apart from being my favorite football formation in soccer terms, it's not about that. 3-4-3 notionally talks about the 10 things that you're involved in, the 10 aspects of your role, the 10 aspects of you. And right now, today, 3-4-3, that's how they're laid out. Three of them are the essence of you. You'll be absolutely brilliant at them. And when you're involved in the act of doing those three things, time just seems to just drift gently past. You don't feel drained. You feel energized at the start, at the end. You have great impact. This is what people talk about behind your back, about these three things. You love doing them. At the other end, you've got the three things that you detest, that you hate. When you're involved in the act of doing them, you'll accept any distraction. You get hacked off. You're a miserable piece of work in the act of doing them and after doing them. You put them off forever and they accumulate stinky, smelly. I've got to do those three things. And I've seen people that they say, right, I'm going to do it next Friday. I'm going to book the whole Friday out and I'm going to do my bottom three things, wherever they are. So, of course, that Friday comes around and they have an awful night's sleep on the Thursday night and they get into work and they hate it. They might even be sick. And it's what a waste. What a waste. And the four in the middle are the four that come with the turf. We're not sure yet where they're growing for you, to be top or bottom.
Right.
And my point with 3-4-3 is you, your career, your life, your earnings, your success, however you measure it, is a product of how much of your time you spend in the top three, not how quickly or efficiently you sort the bottom three. You will die at the end of your lifespan with those bottom three things still in the in tray waiting to be done. So the thing with those is outsource them, pay someone, swap with someone, because the great thing is everybody's 3-4-3 is different, but move them on. Spend more time in your top three. Anything you can do to be involved in the essence of you will accelerate everything for you. And that is a simple note. So that's one of them.
What's interesting is that I like the fact you said it's 3-4-3, because I've come across other lists that say identify all the things that you really want to do, the things that you hate doing that are your essence, the things you hate doing, and then the things that you know you're not, kind of are stuck in the middle. Some people say list them all. I think it's really important that you minimize that to a point, because otherwise you run into that paralysis by analysis situation, yeah. Right? Where you look at, and then you look at all the 50 things that you have and you're like, okay, I'm going for a walk or I'm going to go watch Netflix, because it removes that. Here's the thing, is that it creates complications, like we were talking about earlier. It complicates things, because now all of a sudden you've added layers that really, you know, don't need, I mean, you can break it down to those. I mean, I, as you're talking about it, I'm like, you know, there are things that, that I want to remove from my equation as moving forward, you know, like the things that I just don't like doing. Yeah. And I mean, we all have them. I mean, I don't think what you're saying is, you'll never have things you don't like doing, but it's important to recognize that you don't like doing them and then get either get them done, because sometimes you do. Some people don't have the resources to not do them, or just get them out of the way as quickly as possible. Yeah. Deal with them. It's like, I mean, there's the whole Brian Tracy talks about Eat That Frog, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. The funny thing about Eat That Frog is to get the big task out of the way first. I don't look at it that way. I look at it like get the gross thing that like get move the crap out of the way. I like, you know, I like getting all the minutia done, mm-hmm. so I can really focus my energy on the big stuff. Do you work that way? Do you work where it's like, let me focus on my big things and then get the minutia out of the way? Or do you say, let me get this minutia out of the way and give myself this understanding that once that's out of the way, I can really focus on the big three? And by getting it out of the way, I mean, that could mean assigning it to somebody else. Like, how do you work when it comes to that?
Yeah, well, you're right. But in the world we now live in, with the volume of stuff that's going on with the internet and social media, there's detail that we could spend every day getting through. And people in corporations don't realize that days and months go past and they're still just doing the little thing.
They're stuck in email. Yeah. They're stuck in these little, they spend all their time there. And I think, like, relating back to impact, I mean, everyone's going to work a little bit differently. I know some people like to get those big, like, success-oriented tasks done first, because then they can have the most impact with them and then they can deal with all the crap later.
Yeah.
Whereas I work the opposite way. I need to get the crap out of the way first to know that there's... That's why I'm a night owl, I guess, because I know that when the kids go to bed, if they wake up at 1 in the morning or midnight or 11 o'clock and they say, Dad, can I get up? I'm like, no. If I'm a morning person, the exact opposite would happen. I'd be like, well, okay, get up. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very personal. But so back to your point, you know, I mean, you're saying, you know, like, yeah, we have so many things coming out, so much input. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I thought it was just an important distinction.
It is. And everybody has their own way. And I would say there'll be some ideas. And the whole point about the Simple Way and the Impact Code is there'll be a piece in there. There'll be a note in there that will hit and resonate for you. There's notes in there for people who get stuck. And the whole thing, yeah, I get the Brian Tracy piece, and there's a split there. If you've got lots of the bottom three, as I would say in 3-4-3 terms, to get through, mm-hmm. Do what you love and love what you do, which is another note I've written about. That's an Impact Code, which is spend time doing things that you love doing, or all the other stuff, learn how to love doing those things, whatever that might mean for you. Find a new way, reward yourself, have a cup of coffee after every 15 minutes. I don't know, whatever might be right for you, but find a new way of shifting your attitude. And Brian Tracy will talk about that too. Shift your attitude when you're in the act of those other things. Don't make them miserable. So if anything falls outside of doing what you love or loving what you do, you've not finished. There should only be one or the other. That's the only two options.
Yeah.
The other one, in terms of just like Eat That Frog, is start the difficult thing early. And I get that. For me, the way I work is I am a professional procrastinator. I'm really, really good at it.
You put the pro in procrastinating.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm still very productive. And people say, well, how do you do that? Well, I'm not sure. And because I do what I do, I probably overly study and overly think about what I do. But sometimes I'm getting myself ready. And it might be, as you say, clear the crap out of way just to allow me to breathe deep and then really go for it. I put off, for example, there's a piece of writing I need to do. I will put that off for days. And then I'm teasing myself with, is it today? Is it today? Is it today? And I'll create the right environment. It might be getting the minutiae done first. So everybody has a way of working.
It's interesting, as you're talking about this, there's a couple things I definitely need to do as we're and I'm like, you know, the thing is you can, there's a, and Pressfield talks about the resistance and you know, Seth Godin talks about the lizard brain and all that stuff. We all fight this battle. And that's the interesting, I mean, most people when we talk about this kind of stuff, they assume that we've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
We have frameworks in place that allow us to not allow us to move things forward even when we don't have things mm-hmm. figured out, mm-hmm. right? And I think that that's an important distinction, is that, you know, I mean, the reason that we have impact, the reason you have impact, the reason that your work has impact isn't because you have it down pat. It's that you have your framework down pat and you have your systems down pat that allow you to have a less friction and less decision fatigue to worry about when it's time to, you know, step up to the plate, yeah. right?
And I stopped beating myself up some yep. time ago, because when we don't follow through on things and get stuff done, we are not bad and we are not odd. It's almost a human trait to not get on sometimes, because our brain is scouring for more, either more information, or we're not sure, or there's other options. And depending on who you are, some people are taking in even more than they need to. Other people naturally just a little bit more black and white and we'll just get on. And, you know, we all have our style. And you say about your framework or your template, it's about, that's the way I work. I'm not beating myself up. I will get stuff done. And the reason I will get stuff done is much, much, I've hardly got, well, I'm bound to have stuff in my life. Back to 3-4-3, those bottom three things that I detest and I hated, I kept cleansing the 3-4-3 so that my daily productive work life is more often to do with the things that I'm brilliant at, or the things that come with the turf of running my business and doing what I do. That's okay. I'm neither happy nor sad. They're okay. They're middling. And there's hardly anything in my work week that drains the guts out of me, because I 3-4-3 it. I'm either paying someone else to do it, or I've automated it, or I don't do it, or I found another way of doing it. And it makes such a difference.
I think that's a great way to end off. Simon, where can people find you online, and where can they get your book?
Books, best way
both books,
is
actually.
Books. The Impact Code is available widely on all the online shops, as is The Simple Way. And in some retailers across both sides of the Atlantic. You can find me on www.simontyler.com. And all of the conventional things like LinkedIn and Twitter, simply Simon T is my Twitter handle. So all those things are out there that people can find me.
This has been a great chat. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today.
Mike, thank you so much as well. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
There you have it. You can go to simontyler.com to learn more about Simon and buy his book. You know, you want to start off 2016 making an impact, then the Impact Code is going to help you with that. So I would strongly encourage you to check it out, as well as any others that are from that print. You know, Ben Elijah, who did the Productivity Habits, his book is from the same publisher. You can kind of tell from the covers that they're trying to create some unilateral branding, which I think is really cool. And Simon, thanks so much for joining me on the show. I know we talked a few months back, but I felt that this one was evergreen and could go at any time of year. So this was a gift to all of you who are listening to the show. And of course, we've got great guests coming up in the future. Next week's guest is particularly, I'm really excited to start off 2016 with my next guest, and you'll learn about that next week. I hope you'll subscribe. And if you want to get more episodes and hear my voice more often than you are now, then I encourage you to become a Patreon supporter of the podcast. Head over to patreon.com/productivityist. There are a ton of perks there. There are bonus episodes that you can have. There's video. There's all that stuff and loads more. So I encourage you to join me there. And, you know, 'tis the season for giving, right? So there you go. Isn't that reason enough to head over there? anyway, I want to wish all of you a happy holiday season. And we are going. Like, this is Christmas Day. This is released, and New Year's Day, there's going to be another one. There's no rest for the wicked here when it comes to the Productivityist podcast. So until next week, I am your host, Mike Vardy, reminding you to stop guessing and start going. Happy holidays.